This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Coming up, Gordon Evans talks with Scott Zimmer of Bridgeworks. He will discuss the generational divide as part of the annual Respecting Differences program this year in Kalamazoo. But first, I bring you the deeply personal story of Curtis and Pamela Robinson, co-directors of the Emerging Hope Family Strengthening Program. That's a nonprofit serving the under-resourced in the Kalamazoo area. The couple say they don't want money to stand in the way of families getting the counseling and other services that they need. On April 30th is their group's signature outreach event, the annual Emerging Hope Mental Health Forum. The Robinsons and I talked recently about the work of their nonprofit. Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you for having us here.
It's a privilege to be here with you.
Now, both of you are co-directors, husband and wife, of an organization called Emerging Hope Family Strengthening Program. What does HOPE stand for?
Having only positive expectations.
Why did you start that organization, and when did you do it?
So it did start in 2002. It started as a parenting program. Typically, we just offered parenting classes at that point to marginalized single parents. As of 2013 and on, we were able to actually get some grant dollars from the different foundations, and we were able to enlarge the program out to include mental health counseling, life skill training, coaching, and mentoring, as well as some online classes.
Sometimes people, they have a life experience that causes them to start an organization. What happened to you that made you so passionate that, you know what, we need to have some parenting classes and start this organization?
Well, as an African-American woman, I experienced a divorce. I was married about a 12-year period. And after experiencing that divorce, I thought, well, I'll be now a statistic, an African-American woman, single parent with children, and I'll become a negative type statistic. But I'll tell you, that didn't happen. I was actually working toward my master's degree at that time. I saw how people looked at me differently because I was a single parent. So I said, no, I'm not going to let this situation actually devour me. I'm going to actually take that and use it as a stepping stone. And I saw others that maybe weren't as successful as I was, other single parents. So I said, what I'm going to do is take what I've learned, how to navigate this system as a single parent, and utilize that to teach other minority parents how to actually go to school. You can get your education. You can actually parent your children still. You don't have to become a product of the system. I have three children, and at 2002, they were 10, 8, and 4.
Let's move now to Mr. Robinson, your husband. Mr. Robinson, I know that one of the skill sets that you offer as part of your nonprofit is you are a certified recovery coach and a licensed minister. Can you tell us about your testimony?
I had experienced some hardships in life. I was a minister, and I had struggled. I had some stressors in my life that caused me to drink. And as a result of that, I resigned out of the ministry and went into a program to get my perspective back. And as a result of that, I saw that such a need for other young men that was struggling with substance abuse, alcoholism. And from that, I partnered with my wife, Pamela, to incorporate the skills that I had learned through recovery, also through peer support for those who are struggling.
Mrs. Robinson, you talked about how your nonprofit started out with parenting classes. You have expanded to offer a range of services, life skill training and coaching and mentoring, to now offer mental health services. And that's as a result of grants and so on that you've gotten. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to add mental health services?
Mm-hmm. We've decided to add the mental health counseling aspect and the mental health form to our parenting program because of a personal reason. We have a daughter, 26-year-old, that at the age of three, experienced a massive grand mal seizure, which as a result, she was comatose for probably over a 48-hour period. After coming out of that situation, she required counseling, medication, and therapy. And so throughout her life, we have had to advocate for her through the mental health system to help her to remain stabilized. And so as a family, we have experienced firsthand the mental health system and how to navigate through it. And sometimes things weren't as favorable, but we were able to actually find the support out there that we needed. And so that's one reason. And then the other reason being that my husband and I, both being professionals in the mental health field, we have worked with people that have fallen through the cracks, per se, with mental health. They've haven't been able to get the adequate mental health services for whatever reason. They haven't been taken seriously. They have had challenges keeping on their medication and getting to appointments and whatnot. And so we've seen people that have actually struggled and their lives have actually become unraveled with their children, and people have actually lost their children to the system because of mental health issues. And so on a professional side, we thought this would be a good fit with our parenting program, because we see that people that are struggling, that are poor and impoverished and disenfranchised, most often those people actually present with mental health concerns as well.
Let's, for just a quick moment, broaden the conversation in terms of mental health. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of how that is an issue overall across socioeconomic groups?
There are so many barriers out there that keep people from seeking mental health services. Oftentimes, it's extremely difficult for family members to accept the fact that their loved one needs those mental health services. And this is across the board with all people. Sometimes people feel that this is a shameful situation, and it brings about disgust and self-doubt. They wonder, you know, did I cause this problem and whatnot? Resources may not be available. If the person has a certain type of diagnosis, services may be harder to actually come about because of that. And so across the board, services for people with mental health needs can be somewhat challenging. However, if a person is willing to advocate for their loved one and walk alongside them, loved one or friend, then we find that greater success is actually obtained.
Next, we talked about a national survey on clinical depression done in the mid-90s to find out why people don't seek treatment. It was conducted by advocacy group Mental Health America. What did Black respondents cite as their top reasons for not getting help? Curtis Robinson speaks.
Denial is 40% of the problem. There's a problem with them feeling embarrassed and ashamed. That's 38% of the people. 31%, they don't want the type of help that's offered, or they refuse help. Some lack money or insurance. 17% we found is based on fear. And lack of knowledge of treatment is another problem, which is 17% we found. And last but not least of these issues that individuals face is they face hopelessness. And the statistics tells us that 12% feel a sense of hopelessness, that there is not hope, but there is hope. Having only positive expectations is what we offer.
Yes, and then there are other statistics from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. 1 in 4 adults, approximately 61.5 million Americans, experience mental illness in a given year. And approximately 20% of youth ages 13 to 18, they experience mental disorders in a given year. And about 9.2 million adults have co-occurring mental health and addiction disorders.
Earlier, Mrs. Robinson, you were talking about how there are certain mental illnesses that are hard to get treatment for. What were you referencing?
Yes, and I'm referencing more so the disorders such as the schizophrenia disorders, and mood disorders sometimes are hard to actually get those services for because they're harder to treat. That disorder is so transient, and it's people experience highs and lows and all. So it's sometimes it could be challenging for that mental health clinician or the psychologist, the psychiatrist to find the right regimen of medication to treat that particular illness until people actually grow tired of going back and forth to that clinician for help. And they feel that there's really no hope because I don't feel like I'm getting better. So they stop in the middle of treatment. And that makes it harder to actually get those services and actually keep those services going. And that is especially with people that are challenged with a lower income or people that are disenfranchised that don't have anyone to take them to the appointments, to follow up with them, to make sure that they're getting the appropriate services that they need.
And when you refer to mood disorders, are there some in particular that you're referring to? Are you referring to like bipolar or something else?
Yes, mood disorders, meaning bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other phobias that people may live with.
From here, let's expand and talk about an annual event that you hold. This will be the 9th year that you're doing it. It's called the Emerging Hope Annual Mental Health Forum. About how many people tend to come to this?
Roughly 150 people attend the forums each time that they're offered. Of that number is comprised of both mental health professionals as well as those that are receiving services from the mental health system and those that are actually living with those conditions, and then community members that are actually concerned about their loved ones or others that struggle with mental illness and or developmental disabilities.
Your nonprofit serves, I think, largely, you said marginalized communities. Yes. And I imagine you mean economically marginalized, racially, marginalized communities. Why did you see a need to go from just offering services to this community to actually now expanding it and having a forum?
This was important to do to actually expand our services beyond the parenting component and counseling component because we really felt a heart to actually get this information out to the community and to advocate for those without a voice. We wanted a venue whereby we could bring together the mental health professionals, clergy members, members of our community that are struggling with mental illness and developmental disabilities. We wanted to bring them all under one roof to actually learn together. Oftentimes we see that we have the professionals and the clergy and the people that are actually orchestrating services. They're on one side of the table, but the clients and those that are community members or whatnot, they're on one side of the table. Well, we wanted to bring them all together under one roof to actually go through workshops together, hear a keynote speech together, sit down and have lunch together, and actually partner together to actually bring more cohesiveness to that system, to see that though everyone is working together in partnership and possibly when in doing so, this could actually bring about more hope as we all walk alongside one another to help them regain stability.
Has it been your experience that there are certain communities where the stigma of receiving mental health services is greater than others?
Oh, yes, there are. There are various things that's going on, some unique things about the under-resources of minority communities is that historically, communities of color have experienced unique and considerable challenges in accessing the mental health services. Historically, adversity, which includes backgrounds of slavery and sharecropping and race-based exclusion from health education, social and economical resources, translate into socioeconomic disparities experienced by the Afro-Americans today. And social economical status, in turn, is linked to mental health. People who are impoverished, homeless, incarcerated, or have substance abuse problems are at high risk for poor mental health. And we have statistics to prove that because we found, statistically speaking, from the United States Health and Human Services, They've said in their studies, recent studies, that adult blacks are 20% more likely to report serious psychological distresses than adult whites. Adult blacks living below poverty are 2 to 3 times more likely to report serious psychological distresses than those living above poverty.
It sounds like there's some unique circumstances that could make people of color very vulnerable to needing some services. I think some of them you're talking about economics, certain mm-hmm. things dealing with racism. But in terms of in that community, is it accepted to get help?
I'd say it's a roughly 70% would say no, and 30% would say yes, it is okay.
Is that just based on your experience?
Yes, that is based on my personal experience working with people of color in the mental health system. Why that is back once again to the stigma of seeking mental health services and saying that I don't want to be called crazy, you know, per se. I don't want to be looked at as though I'm weak and I can't handle my own problems and all. And so, you know, oftentimes it's just frowned upon to go out and seek those mental health services out.
The Emerging Hope Mental Health Forum is a 4-hour-long event with a keynote speaker followed by 3 workshops dealing with issues related to mental illness and developmental disabilities. 1 workshop addresses the needs of parents. 2nd helps the church embrace people with mental illness and/or developmental disabilities. And 3rd gives tips for navigating the mental health system, whether for yourself or a family member. I notice that one of your sessions, it seems like it's trying to reach out to the faith community.
Yes.
Why was that important?
That was important because people that are struggling with mental health concerns and are a part of a faith-based community, oftentimes that's the first place that they'll turn to for help when they're in a crisis. And we found that oftentimes those places of worship are not as equipped as they should be to embrace that issue. We thought it would be an excellent opportunity to present the workshop entitled Embracing People with Mental Illness and Developmental Disabilities Within the Church. This workshop will inform people on how to actually work with people when they present this way in a faith-based setting. And we don't want to single out the illness as something taboo, but it's something that's very treatable and manageable. It's considered a genetic or biological condition, and sometimes it's brought about by environmental factors. It shouldn't be looked at as something that someone has done deliberately. We want to actually educate the faith-based community on how to embrace people that present with mental health challenges and how to refer them on over to a professional type of situation. And when they refer them over to those professionals, not just to leave them alone with that professional, but to continue to walk alongside them as they work their way through becoming well.
As we close and listeners are listening to what you're saying, and perhaps maybe they're not able to go, what is it that you most hope listeners get from your conversation?
I would hope that listeners would take away from this conversation that they are loved, respected, and valued people, that they don't have to hide behind mental illness and or developmental disabilities. And when I say hide behind, they don't have to be afraid to come out and take part in life. They don't have to feel as though they're stigmatized and that they're less than anyone else. We would like them to walk away feeling that they are encouraged and that they are empowered and that there is hope for them.
Any parting thoughts, Mr. Robinson?
Yes. In each family, there is someone who is suffering in quietness. There is someone who we have not encouraged to seek help. There are those individuals who are crying out that they need help, but they're crying in a silent way. And our purpose, one of our greatest purposes, is that we put a voice to that cry.
And just a few housekeeping questions. Was it ever free at one point? Is this the first year you're charging?
Yes, it was free at one point. And now there's that fee to offset costs of hosting the forum. And also, we have other events that we host throughout the year, and those funds will actually be utilized to support some of the other services that we offer. However, we do want to mention that there are limited scholarships available to those that cannot afford the registration fee.
And another educational opportunity that we have added starting last year is that we offer CEU credits.
That's continuing education clock hours.
That's
from
correct.
The state for coming to the events. And yep. There's an additional cost for that. Is that not correct?
Yes.
I do have this question. When people come, will you have a table or a display with some resources? So people, if they're just at that moment thinking, you know what, I need to get some help for my loved one or for myself.
Yes, we have a resource fair that's going to be a part of this event as well. We have several community-based agencies that will be there that day with information and to actually connect them with their services on that particular day.
Can you give an example of a few?
We have the Disability Network of Southwest Michigan. We have the Advocacy Services for Children. We have the National Association of Mental Illness that will be there as well, to name a few.
What, as far as you know, has been the impact of this event?
38% of those that have attended the forum have actually started mental health counseling. 25% of those that have attended the forum have actually followed through with their faith-based organization and actually become a part of and have been embraced by their faith-based communities. Another statistic is that 68% of those that have attended the forum over the last year have actually returned to actually attending future events. We have tracked these trends and we have found that there really is success due to hosting these forums. And this is our 9th annual mental health forum this year.
Pamela Robinson, Curtis Robinson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure.
Curtis and Pamela Robinson hold their 9th annual Emerging Hope Mental Health Forum on Saturday, April 30th from noon to 4 p.m. at the Kalamazoo Public Library in downtown Kalamazoo. There's a nominal fee to attend. For more details, visit our webpage at WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.